This talk was given by Michael Yukon Grody at the Zen Center of New York City. Yukon is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ZCNYC. Thanks for listening.
Hi, everybody. So many familiar faces. So great to see you here. Thank you for coming. It's, hot in the midst of the summer, and there's a full house of people here, and it's kind of like, for a monk, it's kind of like a monk's wet dream. It's like sharing the Dharma, there's nothing better. And there are actually people to share it with here. So it's pretty wonderful. Thank you. You know, there's a question that is often asked monks to have been sitting for a long period of time, for many years, and particularly in this day and time, as to why meditate? Why sit? You know, why bother? There's so much to do. You know, there is so much to produce. Why sit there like a lump? You know, and so this talk is about reinvigorating those of you who have been sitting for a while, and to help inspire those of you who just have taken up a practice for the first time or who are young in this practice, to go over the reasons why. Why do this? You know, what about the times when we bring ourselves to the cushion and it's about the last thing we want to do, right? If you meditate, say, because you want to feel good, you know, though there are those moments of feeling good, scattered in between everything else, you know. If the purpose of meditation, as Pema Chodron says, is to feel good, most of us would feel like we were doing it wrong most of the time. Right? If the purpose of meditation was to escape the world, there are a whole lot of ways that are a lot more fun and certainly less challenging than to sit in stillness with your mind. You know, this mind of ours is pretty wild. It's wily and it's unpredictable. And it's chock full of all of our joys and sorrows and desires and habits and rituals. What we think to be our successes, what we think to be our failures. The whole catastrophe, as Dita Roshi used to say, our old teacher. None of this can we escape, but we can, like arising out of a dream, begin to wake up and relax into the moment that is in front of us. It's a lighter heart, where the past, the present, and the future arise in this very moment. It's quite magical that way. A kind of timelessness. I always quote Einstein when he said that time is an illusion, albeit a persistent one. I think that's a great quote. So perhaps we start seeing more clearly. We catch ourselves spinning out into this fantasy or that storyline, and we harden ourselves around it, and we harden ourselves around others, of course. Events that have happened, ways we have been wronged or done wrong, revenge fantasies, all the ways that we learn to maintain our separateness rather than our limitless connections, and the sweet honey of our tender, vulnerable life. I like it when I said that. I like that, the sweet honey. Just the seeing is the thing which leads to less judgment. Just the seeing, just the noticing. This all comes and goes in its own time. And we in time get so tired of clinging to them. It wears us out. I was talking to someone the other day, and he was telling me, he was inspired and telling me all of the experiences that he was having and all the ways in which he holds this life, and very anxious, very tense. And I finally looked at him and I said, you seem tired to me, man. You seem so tired. And he said, yeah, I'm worn out. It's all of that holding, all of that clutching. It makes us tired. And it gives us little else. The more you understand yourself, the more open to your brothers and sisters in this practice, in this life, you well understand that they are on the same dance floor as you are. And just as you have mysteriously arisen in this life, so have they. And they too will pass one day from this life, just like you. It takes a kind of a strength to keep practice going, because there is actually no place, no goal you arrive at ever. No gold stars and no one to pat you on the back. No one. That was such a great sit. You're doing so good. No one will do that for you. It's a lifelong, continuing, unfolding. Practice doesn't end. You can always become more settled. You can always become more still. You can always become more grounded. You can always become more eccentric. And, you know, and the layers covering over what has always been there from the beginningless beginning begins to unfold. It allows you to see things fresh again, things that you thought were all old and moldy, and understand something that you've not understood before. There is always that. But the essence of what we do on the cushion is to wake up and attend to this moment. And the resistance to being here right now is so powerful and so immense. You know, we love our delusions. We love to indulge in them. We give them a lot of room to thrive. After all, to relax into what's unknown, it's not an easy thing. It's very challenging. But it is what we have been given. It's part of our inheritance. And not to be awake to this reality is kind of a waste in my view. It's a waste of this breath. Training our mind to be more spacious and open and accepting the experience of what life hands us. When something is seen clearly, there is a relaxation that happens around the experience. Less grasping, less anxiety, leads to a life of a bit more ease and just generosity. Loving kindness arises. We chant the Metta Sutra now at the monastery. This is a Tibetan chant. And it really goes into all of the aspects of how to develop loving kindness. But how about learning to be awake, attentive, patient with whatever that is coming up at the time? Just this in and of itself, could that possibly be enough? You know, it's enough to see the mind bring up whatever it does. You show up. I've been hearing that expression a lot. My nephews are all the time saying, you know, to me, I'm going to show up. Showing up for this dance, let go, and then see where the mind goes from there. Just allowing yourself to stay with the arising and the falling away of the mind's activity, which are thoughts. Allowing a lot of room for the good, the difficult, the painful, the unwanted. This is not what we do generally. To stay with whatever is happening in our habitual patterns, we continually move away from what we feel at the time to be uncomfortable, and then try to move to the good stuff and the pleasant stuff and away from the dis-ease and the confusion. It's natural, but oftentimes that's not helpful. In a retreat, when you're feeling bored, when your body's hurting. You know, we do these every month. We do a week-long retreat at the monastery called a Sesshin, for those of you who don't know. And it's a lot of sitting. It's anywhere from 9 to 12 hours of sitting a day. In that period of time, I guarantee you, there will be moments when you'll be sitting there going, why the hell am I doing this? You know, and your body is hurting, and the same ridiculous or fascinating thought is coming up for the 10,000th time. And we would love to be just about anywhere else but on the cushion. You know, your ability to just hang in there no matter what may be coming up, that's what is so revolutionary about the very act of just facing whatever arises and then letting that go. Seeing it clearly and then letting it go. It is common to so many Buddhist practices, so many Buddhist practice centers, practice places, monasteries, to come back home being right where you are. That old saying that you can't help but cover the ground on which you stand. Well, in this case, the cushion on which you sit. You're sitting on that cushion and you're breathing. This is not rocket science. This struggle is common to all of us, though. It is challenging. And because we all deal with the challenges of facing this mind and our feelings and ideas, we then develop empathy for each other, a compassion, a loving kindness. We are all involved in the very same struggle to be clear and whole. And I don't care how long you've been sitting, whether it's 35 years, 25 years, whether it's a week, we all begin in the same place. We all start together. We all start with that mind and the breath and the settling down of all this commotion that gets stirred up in our mind, you know. And the Sangha does this together. You're not alone in this, as the Buddha often was. You know, you may prefer some other traditions of transcendent experiences, altered states, special states rising above the difficulties of life. I did go to Berkeley in the 60s, late 60s, early 70s. I know all about the altered states of experience. I do. I do. You know, but what we do with Zen meditation is opening the heart and mind to the difficulties and joys of this life just as it is, right now, right here. Getting down with nothing special, as Joko Beck says in her book. She writes a whole book about nothing special. Keeping it simple and direct. It's not very flashy, you know, but it's available to everyone human as a part of our birthright to be awake to the experience that's in front of you without any contrivance, you know, to experience what you experience while you're experiencing it. We nurture that steady, true heart, not turning away. It's kind of a developing a quality of fortitude, you know, an honest presence that can be developed. You know, there is not such a thing as bad meditation, period. There's no such thing. You know, that you've taken yourself and you've brought yourself to the cushion and you sat yourself down. And even if the mind is spinning out, there you are on the cushion, sitting, working it out. There's no such thing as a bad meditation, period. You face it and you let it go. In that activity, you are willing then to face yourself. That is a beautiful gesture and a way to nurture yourself, because you've been loyal to you in that radical moment of seeing and releasing, seeing and releasing, of catching yourself in a long contrived dialogue and then seeing it and releasing it. It's the very essence of learning to be free, of liberating yourself. In that moment, you are just right there, breathing and doing what you're doing while you're doing it. I can't repeat that enough, I guess. The moment you come home, the moment of just coming back, the moment you catch yourself, one single moment, At that time, when you notice that you were thinking the whole time, you're training in the releasing of the habits. And then you're inhabiting yourself. I like that too. You're inhabiting yourself. Getting rid of thoughts is not the point. And in my experience, forget about it. Just forget about it. You know, the thoughts will keep coming. That's not the point. It's seeing the thought, and then it's not grasping the thought. It's not holding on to making more of something, but to gently, gently let it go. And I say that here with emphasis, because when I come into New York, it's just such an aggressive place. So it's so aggressive, man. It's just like, oh. And it's like, you have to be kind to yourself. You know, you have to be loving to yourself. You can't be judging yourself here, not in this atmosphere, not in this, in the way the world is now. You have to be very gentle and very kind with yourself. We need to love the process. It's never the goal. And not be hard on ourselves. Allowing the room to learn and love the process. It doesn't have to be a burden. The reality is that it actually is a gift to have the time to practice and to do it together. You know, be gentle. Cultivating the ability to open and then to open and then to open and then to open endlessly. Leading us away from concretizing things and fixating. Acknowledge, let go. Acknowledge, let go. If your mind is scattered here and there, how can you be wholehearted with what is right in front of you? Your mind is too scattered with here and there, you know. How can you enter into a real relationship if you're not there? To enter into a real relationship. Excuse me. You know, I recently went to New Zealand. I don't get around much, you know. I haven't left the monastery in, you know, 20 years. And so Shugen Roshi, my teacher, said, well, let's go to New Zealand. They're celebrating their 30th anniversary. So off we go to New Zealand, and we do a sesshin. And, you know, they do two sesshins a year, so, you know, there's all kinds of craziness going on. And it's at a camp, and in the summer is winter there. So it's going down into a room, and it's like walking into a refrigerator. You know, it's really, really cold, but very, very beautiful. And the Kiwis down there are so appreciative and so loving. People coming all that way down under. And so I'm there for the longest I've ever been away from the monastery. I was there for 3 weeks. And I come home, and I'm the gardener at the monastery, you know, and I take this job very seriously. And I get back, and the assistant gardener, who was just put in the garden, who knows nothing about plants. I came back to like a Stephen King novel. It was like everything was, and you know, he built this, he built that. It was all wrong, man. It was all wrong. And the weeds, it's just a jungle. And my little bamboo sitting area looks like a 14-year-old psychotic put himself in there with a little ice chest, and all of the bamboo was mowed down. Oh my God. And so I get back, and so I see my mind start to freak out. You know, I'm like, I'm a little attached, you know, and this person did what this person does and the best he can do. And he was trying, and he thought that all these things were good things to do. And seeing my mind and the way it reacted to that is such a wake up call. You know, it's so good to see you back at the beginning of your practice again, having to start all over. Because, you know, I'm in my bed twitching, you know, and I'm like, and I can't stop the mind. And I'm feeling like, you know, victimized. Like, I was just gone 3 weeks, man. How did he do all this? You know? And then watching it and keep coming back. I kept coming back, and I started to relax, and I started, and I didn't, he was on vacation when I got back, which is really good. Because it gave me an opportunity to, you know, settle down and really engage my practice. It wasn't life and death, though for some plants it was. It was, you know, but for me, and I can, I can relax. And what was helpful was when I saw him, to meet him where he was and relax into that conversation about what I thought was okay and what was not, and was some of the good. I started out with some of the good things that he did, you know. And so it's really, it's humbling, you know. You sit a lifetime, and you develop this practice, and you see it completely fall apart, and it's extremely powerful, you know, when you realize that you are subject to, after all this work, you are still subject to this arising, this falling away of the things that you want and the things that you don't want, the things that you're attached to. It's extremely helpful. So I was very, you know, to my assistant, my hat's off to him. He was my teacher in that moment, you know. He was my greatest teacher because I completely lost it. And then coming back and finding your feet again, your the ground under you. So powerful. So wonderful and so ego killing. So ego killing. So in this process of developing your meditation, you know, there may be some very nice gifts that come along with this kind of work, you know. And there is definitely some real ease and a sense of transformation. There is a sense of equanimity. But, you know, be careful here, because when you notice that you start sharing these experiences with others, which I'm often in earshot of, just notice, why are you sharing what your experiences are on the cushion? Be very careful, because that's where the ego arises, and you have to keep coming back to your mind and use the big NBD, no big deal, you know? Because right around the corner from that conversation is a sense of being special. There's a sense of pride. There's a dose of arrogance, you know, of, you know, I'm a practitioner and watch me rock out, you know. Because when you do that, just around the corner is something like what I just went through, you know, just right around the corner. So keep it humble and simple. It's like, these experiences are part of the gift. It's part of the offering of working that hard on the cushion. But it's between you and you and you and your teacher. You know, and when you notice you're wanting to start sharing it, just notice why that might be the case. So to keep from a tendency that some may have to isolate themselves in this practice, some people like to keep to their own, we take up Zazen. And we take the practice and we study how to be in the world in such a way as to relieve our suffering and help others to do the same. You know, how to live in the world and have access to our deepest, most loving sides of our nature. So there are all these guides that we have, you know, to take that mind we develop on the cushion in meditation and then to use it in this world, you know. So we have what we call the six paramitas, or the perfections, or the completeness, the very best of our humanity, to engage with that. So we begin to learn to cultivate them. We use dana, the practice of giving, or generosity, or loving kindness. We practice sila, the ethics, morality, whatever that might mean to you, but generally it means with relieving yourself of the self so that the other is more important at that moment. Patience, the vigor, the energy that it takes to do this practice. Zeal, our sitting, our concentration, developing that. Prajna, from that comes wisdom. Awareness. So this practice we develop is to be offered as a kind of medicine to yourself and others. And like any art, it's constantly in the process of being developed and it's constantly being maintained. You know, we study great masters like Shantideva, a great 8th century Indian master. And we study the great Zen mystics like Dogen, from the 13th century Japan. And we inspire ourselves with those who have gone before us, you know, and who have practiced just as we practice. Just as we let that sitting take place and letting that thought arise and letting that thought pass away, seeing it and letting it go. You know, Dada Roshi helped develop the eight gates of practice, how to take the mind and develop the mind in Zen, practice the arts, how to use work and live ethically, and what it is you do for your livelihood, which matters, and how to live in this body that needs care, and how to work with the teacher. All of it, you know, so you're taking all of that, that mind that you develop on the cushion, and you're moving it out into the world. Like when we do in Kinhin. So if you think that sitting is difficult to ease the mind and calm the mind and settle the mind, then you stand up and you start doing Kinhin, right? So all of a sudden you're in activity, and it's oh so much more difficult when you start moving. So how to take that mind and make that and make the practice real for yourself. So there's a lot of assistance in gaining access to a life of practice. All you need to do is to do it. As the Buddha said, our actions are our only true belongings. There is no escaping the consequences of our actions. Our actions are the ground in which we stand. So sit. So sit. So there's this old hippie poet named Allen Ginsberg. And I'm so old now, I don't know who still knows about Allen Ginsberg. So, you know, maybe there are some people who don't know about him. He was a wild man in the 50s. Ran with Kerouac and all these people. He was of the Beat Generation. It's a bit before me, but he was a poet. And he was a Tibetan Buddhist practitioner. He'd come to the monastery on several occasions. He liked Dada Roshi. And he offered his incredible energy to the practice. But as a Tibetan practitioner, you know, as he was dying, he wrote out his death poem. And this poem gives you an idea of his humor and his entering into his dying in a way that was just so generous and so absurd and so wonderful. And he literally wrote this as he was dying with his Tibetan Lama sitting by his side. And it's called Gone, Gone, Gone. Okay, I wanted to end this talk with it. It's pretty great. So it's, yes, it's gone, gone, gone. Gone, gone away. Yes, it's gone, gone, gone. Gone, gone away. Yes, it's gone, gone, gone. Gone, gone away. Yes, it's gone, 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 gone away. Gone, 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 won't be back today. Gone, 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 just like yesterday. Gone, 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 isn't anymore. Gone to the other shore. Gone, gone, gone. It wasn't here to stay. Yes, it's gone, gone, gone. All gone out to play. Yes, it's gone, 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 until another day. Until another day. No one here to pray. Gone, 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 yak your life away. No promise to betray. Gone, 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 somebody else will pay. The national debt, no way. Gone, 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 your furniture lay away. Plans gone astray, gone, gone, gone. Made hay, gone, gone, gone. Sunken Baiz Bay. Yes, it's gone, gone, gone. Wallet and all you say, gone, gone, gone. As you can wave your pay, yes, it's gone, gone, gone. Gone last Saturday. Yes, it's gone, gone, gone. Tomorrow's another day. Gone, 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 bald and old and gay. Gone, 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 turn old and gray. Yes, it's gone, 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 white beard and cold. Yes, it's gone, 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 cashmere scarf and gold. Yes, it's gone, 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 warp and wolf and wold. Yes, it's gone, 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 far, far away. To the home of the brave, down into the grave. Yes, it's gone, 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 moon beneath the wave. Yes, it's gone, 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 so I end this song. Yes, this song is gone, gone to kick the gong. Yes, it's gone, 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 no more right and no more wrong. Yes, it's gone, 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 gone away. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. Please join us on Saturday, September 8th at the Zen Center of New York City for Awakening to Karma, How Karma Manifests as Our Life and Practice, a day-long retreat offered by Ron Hogan Green Sensei. For details or to find out more about ZCNYC programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ZCNYC.